They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, you're never going to believe how this episode ends.
Secrets of the Legion of Superheroes, number 2. RJ Brand is dying! Published February 1981. Written by E. Nelson Bridwell on plot, Paul Kupperberg on script, art by Jimmy James. Synopsis: Brand's secret is revealed, changing a Legionnaire's life forever.
Oh, we've got part 2 and part 3 of Secrets of the Legion of Superheroes from DC Comics, 1981. E. Nelson Bridwell and Paul Kupperberg.
Yeah.
As well as Jimmy Janes doing their thing. And hey, welcome back to the Clip Show, everybody. I should just pull clips from all of our previous episodes and just slap them together
here. Assemble it out of us talking about the original stories. You know, honestly, I would have recommended you do that, except it would have been just an insane amount of work for like no payback, which I suppose would have been appropriate for the series.
Maybe for the gag. I think it would be the best thing, but here we go. You know, last time we had everybody, the Legion members had converged on Legion HQ and they found Marla and Arla, whatever her name is, going through the membership records, checking out the membership lineup one by one in the order that they joined. And now this week, and this is the problem that I have with this storytelling method in this issue, in issues 2 and 3. If you are trying to find de facto proof of something, you would want to go to the records, right? You would want to go to the actual record where it says, you know, Steve Austin, astronaut, you know, and it gives you every little bit that you need to know about Steve Austin and how he crashed and how he was rebuilt bigger, stronger, faster, better. The $6 million man.
How he learned the Stone Cold Stunner, all these things are important.
Yes. But instead, they have the writers of this debacle have the Legion members tell Marla their origin story, which is, if you're in an investigation, if you're trying to find out who murdered RJ Brand, then you wouldn't want the potential criminal to say, oh yeah, I was born a poor man in Kentucky. And then one day I was struck in the head and I became a Legion member, because that is so full of, you know, false narrative and, you know, what are we being told or not told in this? And so that is a horrible way to do that. I kind of wish they would have just continued this whole thing and waited until the third issue before the Legion converged, so that we get these backstories without the faltering.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I really had a problem with that. It's like, there's no way that I would want, as wonderful as she is, there's no way that I would want Shrinking Violet to tell me her story, or Timberwolf to tell me his origin story, or Sunboy to tell me his origin story, which, as I read Sunboy's origin story, is that a rewrite? Because I could have swore it was his dad that put him in the microwave oven and not somebody else.
No, it was Dr. Regulus. His dad sent him. There is a slight rewrite in this issue, Sunboy Origin, in that in the original story, as it was told in Adventure 348, Sunboy's dad put him in charge of the nuclear facility.
Ah.
Whereas in
I'm going to go hang out with my friends down at the bar. I'm going to leave you in control of the nuclear reactor. I'll be back.
But
later.
His dad, in this one, his dad had him as a delivery boy. And, you know, in the original story, he and his friend Drac or Frag something.
He drank the formula that turned him into Sunboy?
No. Drac was killed in both stories, and then Dirk was thrown in a reactor by Dr. Regulus, who his dad was going to fire. And so Dr. Regulus was killing Dirk to get revenge on his dad, but the radiation didn't kill him. It just turned him into a Sunboy.
So, you know, it's an overview of all the Legionnaires. Wait a minute. Legionnaires. You know, that Legionnaires actually has a ring to it. I kind of like that. I wonder if if they ever thought about, instead of Legion of Superheroes, if they ever decided to name the title Legionnaires. I really like that title.
They would never do that.
I think they really should. I mean, that would be like the smartest move DC could have ever made.
Maybe in an alternate universe. Maybe.
So we get, you know, every member lined up and their tail is spit out. And everyone is like, so Marla, what do you think of that origin story? And Marla's like, I'm still not telling you what I need to tell you. And they're like, why not? He goes, because I don't know all your origin stories yet. And they're like, well, we'll tell you one more. Have you heard of Pharaoh Lad? Oh, wait, that's issue 3 when all the dead Legion is represented.
Yeah, it's this issue has a couple of interesting moments for me because we do get some information that we hadn't had before, but none of it is like super important information. But Brainiac 5, we actually track down the Brainiac lining.
Yeah, the lineage. of Brainiac 5 all the way back to the original Brainiac and then how that was a robot and how they enslaved Kulans. And then all of a sudden, the Kaluans decided that they'd had enough, and they rose up against their robot overlords and decided to become 12th level intellect robots. Not really sure how that works, but that's how
essentially,
they
essentially. Yeah, the Kaluans didn't want to be controlled by the robot, but they wanted to be controlled, or they wanted to be linked through their giant central computer. But it's interesting here that this is one of the first times we see an explanation of the Brainiac, when we initially created Brainiac 5, was not known to be an android. So this shows us Brainiac's sidekick, Vrildox, who eventually becomes Brainiac 2. Right. And then Vril's son is identified as Pran in this issue. And then, of course, his grandson, Kaj, and then his great-grandson, Brainiac 5, Quirrell. Kaj does appear again as Brainiac's father, but it's interesting to me that
Brainiac's father is what's his name flying through the universe on his silver surfboard, playing his electric guitar.
Pulsar Stargrave, and that's the thing, we haven't gotten to that point yet. But the Pulsar Stargrave, I am your father moment, actually does get resolved. It just doesn't get resolved until after this story. But yeah, this
certainly
is really
not,
neat.
And certainly not in this. Secrets of the Legion of Superheroes, because DC actually wanted readers to continue to read the book.
Kaj has come back, but Pran was renamed Lural when the
wait. I thought
was
Pran was later renamed Vrildrox.
No, I misread it. Vril is Brainiac 2. Vril eventually,
yeah, because he goes on to do the Legion. Yeah, and that was the thing. What, Legion 93, 92, 91, something like that. Yeah.
So Vril is Brainiac 2. Pran is Vril's son. Kaj is Brainiac's, or is Vril's grandson, Brainiac 4.
Right.
And then Kaj's son is Quirrell, Brainiac 5, I think. It's interesting to me, though, that even as I'm going through this, I'm not sure.
I seem to remember, and I bet you Legion Omnicon will be able to correct me on this. I could have swore somewhere... Sure. In either a cartoon series or a comic book series, they were making fun of, and it may have even been Legion, that they were making fun of the lineage of Brainiac 1, 5, and there's like a Brainiac 12 who is actually like, actually, I am the progenitor of all the Brainiacs, and I am Brainiac 12, but then my descendant, we decided to name Brainiac 11, and then so on and so forth until you got down to Brainiac 1. Is there a story like that, or am I totally imagining that?
I think you may be imagining it, but it's entirely possible that you saw something that I didn't. I know that I'm not 100% familiar with the Justice League Unlimited, Legion of Superheroes, and they have one. And the the Legion of Superheroes cartoon from 2006 does have Brainiac and Brainiac 5, but it doesn't really address the lineage in between.
And I'm pretty sure that in the revamped Legion
that you grew up with 20 years after I grew up, which is weird, but hey, what are you going to do? Brainiac 4 is actually Quirrell's mom rather than his dad.
Do they ever explain the white monkey? Ever explain the white monkey in any of this?
Coco? Yeah. Coco's just a dude.
Is he the one that assembled the Brainiac entity as we know it today? Thus proving that he is the smartest of all primates.
Coco does date back to a very early Brainiac story.
Yeah.
But they used him as a running gag with Brainiac 5 in the post-relaunch.
Yeah, I remember that. I guess the thing that I still have a problem with, I still have a problem with in this is, and I know, maybe I'm an earthist.
You are.
But I still have a problem with them saying that Brainiac is a human and Saturn Girl is a human. No, she's a Saturian. Just like Brainiac is a Kaluan. They're not humans. Unless there's that Star Trek episode coming up where it's like, we are the androgynous alien that seeded all of your worlds, and that's why you all have two legs and two eyes and two arms.
You want me to spoiler it? Because I could.
Yes, please, because my God, it drives me up the wall. Oh, really? God.
Yeah, that exact thing did happen. And you know who that androgynous alien was?
Mark Waid.
Largand.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that happens after the Crisis on Infinite Earths, but before the reboot into the post-Zero Hour Legion.
Yeah.
So it is at least technically part of this Legion continuity.
I don't know. It still drives me up the wall at this point.
It did happen. I can spoil that for you because, you know, I'm like,
you don't call someone from Mars a human. You call them Martians.
I think the way they're using human here really feels like they're using it as
two arms, two legs,
analogous
two eyes
to humanoid.
Yeah.
Rather than human.
Maybe they should use humanoid.
You know, and you pointed out that if you go to the source, you might get characters who lie. But this also has a couple of actual factual errors in it because Karate Kid refers to the sensei who taught him by the name of the Black Dragon, which I think is really kind of confusing, although, you know, the story itself is kind of confusing. But you remember the Black Dragon killed Val's father. Black Dragon was named Kirao Nezumi. And in this story, they identify the sensei, Japan's greatest hero, who raised Val as Kirao Nezumi. And I'm just like, no, you're wrong. You're wrong and bad. What are you doing, guys? But also in this issue, we do see Asian characters who are not bright yellow. So
paper fades, yeah, I think
that's yeah, but it turns browner as it goes.
Well, that's true too. I did notice that
wonderful Legion moment where Karate Kid slams Superboy into the wall because Jim Shooter.
I mean, I do like going back to the Karate Kid bit. I do like that they attempted at least a little bit more to make Karate Kid and everyone else in that flashback look more Asian without just resulting to orange or yellow or whatever color that they use for Asian people before this.
Y25, I believe was the color they use.
Probably there's two other things that I find that are probably most important in this issue. The first one is this giant double page spread of the Legion Plaza that has, you know, they don't quite do a Jack Kirby, this is the Fantastic Four building, which I kind of wish Jack Kirby would have done that to the Legion at some point, because that would have looked awesome. nor did they do anything. And George Perez has not gotten to this point yet, but you know, George Perez used to do some fantastic exteriors and fantastic interiors of buildings. And so it's almost like, oh man, he would have been great to do a Legion Plaza, either one of those two. But in this case, we got Jimmy Janes, and he's like, well, ladies and gentlemen, here is the Legion headquarters. And you'll notice over there, there's some missiles that they can fire. And there's the space launch pad. And if you look to your left, there's a big old building where they go and they train. And if you notice and look closely, you may see an atrium on top of that. And then if you look over here, and it's just kind of like, it's impressive just because of the scale of what they're doing. But it's really, in my opinion, lacking a lot of details that we would have seen in a Perez or a Kirby rendition of Legion Plaza.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have like the Elliot Brown cutaways from like the Marvel handbooks, but it does explain some things that, you know, didn't necessarily make sense. And it at least explains things like, you know, there's a separate dormitory building with quarters and there's a separate area for training in the Legion Academy building. And mm-hmm. I like that because, again, all of the stuff that we know of the Legion used to exist in, you know, a tiny two-story little spaceship. So
little rocket ship. It's bigger on the inside.
Well, sure, everything is. But that's actually really nice. I feel like, and I think you made the comment that this two-page spread is the best part of the issue. You are correct.
Yeah, because the only other element that I find really interesting, and again, here's the thing, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again probably before the end of this episode. Mm-hmm. What this three-issue mini does is brilliant from what its intention is. The intention of this is to say, hey there, young reader. I know that 280 some episodes or issues of Legion Action probably intimidates you. Here's a great jumping on point where you can learn who all of these kids are. So when you come back and read Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes or just Legion of Superheroes 272, you'll be all caught up. And so it's a great marketing gimmick, and it's a great way to get people who are intimidated by, you know, at this point, 30 years of Legion lore to get into the piece. But if you are someone who has been reading the Legion since the 50s, and it's now the 1980s, first of all, what's wrong with you? Second of all, no, I'm just kidding. So you probably already know who all those members are. This might serve, then, instead of something where you're going to find new information, because there's really no information if you already know it, but it might serve as a great reference material for you so that you're like, I wonder what order they went in. And you don't have to go back through 300 comic book pages. You can just go right to this and you can say, oh, here's the order in which they enrolled. You can go in and find, now what planet was Phantom Girl from? Oh, Imps. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So I've got all of that. And so it could be a great
girl is from Bug Tussle. Thinking Violet is from Imps.
Quiet.
Stop it.
So this could serve as a great
along with your jokes, but I will not allow you to
this is a great this is a great, I think, reference guide for people who are already fans. But if you've been reading these issues back to back to back to back for the last 4 years, granted, I don't know. I'll forget some little tidbit of who threw who in the microwave. But this is, in my mind, a little infuriating. Just because we've kind of rehashed this stuff again and again and again. So, but what it is brilliant. And I think they executed it well. I find it incredibly dry and boring. The only two things that are interesting is the double page spread and the very last page when they're like, all right, Marla, I think we've told you enough. And he's like, no, you don't understand. We're looking for RJ Brand's son because the transfusion can save his life. And they're like, what? We've never heard this before. This is
never.
Scary and amazing.
This is new information.
I know. And then they make us hang on for a whole other month, but you don't have to, because we're going to talk about issue 3 right here where they're like, wait a minute. Have you heard about all the dead Legion members? And so then we get to know about all the dead Legion members. I think at this point,
all three of them,
Yes. And then they're like, oh, and we haven't told you about all the rejects and what they're up to. And so then we get all the rejects and what they did. And then they're like, oh, wait a minute. What about all of the substitute heroes? And then we spend an inordinate amount of time learning about Lana Lang and her Bee Queen thing and just stuff that's not important.
Insect Queen. The thing that I really find interesting about this issue is that, do you remember, it wasn't that many episodes ago when we did that Legion tabloid, the big giant Legion tabloid where Rands and they got married. A lot of the visual reference in here that Jimmy Janes is using is from that Legion tabloid.
Well, and so
which
I
includes
think, yeah,
the exact pose that Tyrock is using his powers in, but more importantly, it includes an incorrect costume for Pharaoh Lad.
He could have
changed
Pharaoh
it. Lad's costume had those two, but he didn't. He died. He died in a costume that had two
I think
rows
there
of ribbons.
There is a
going
whole
straight
episode where he comes back as a ghost.
And still has straight rivets all the way down.
No, but after that, he was like, after that, he saw his reflection in the mirror and was like, what am I doing? And he went and changed his costume.
He's dead.
It's the afterlife.
I'm going to hit you with a
stick. No, so here's the thing. Remember what I said just a moment ago about one of the great things about this three-issue miniseries for older readers is it serves as a great reference point for people to go back to. And likewise, if you're wanting to see all of the Legion members in one place, the most previous issue that you could see that in was that big wedding anniversary issue where you had basically all of this stuff again. But you know, in a form where you can say, okay, I need to find a reference for Pharaoh Lad. I'm not going to dig back through 200 issues of comics to find the last appearance of Pharaoh Lad and try to draw him from that. I'm going to go to this last time that we know he was in print, and I'm going to go from that. And so, you know, as we move forward, I think we look at books like the big wedding issue, and we look at these miniseries as, again, these reference points, not only for readers, but also for artists to go, okay, now what's this guy's deal? And I can quickly flip through issue 3, and I can follow and find all about Polar Boy that I need to move forward. And so, you know, we talked, I think, last episode that... that's a different show. I think we talked in the last episode that it really felt like in 271 that this was a the end moment. I would say that we are in kind of a, I don't want to say a version 1.5, but it really feels like we're in a decimal point version of the Legion where it's like, okay, from this point until we decide to change things up again with 5 years later in Crisis on Infinite Earths, that this is kind of that reboot starting point for the Legion. And so, yes, you know, you're right. There is a costume error here. But that is because of the last reference journal or the last reference point that we have for this. And I'm going to bet in a future issue appearance of Pharaoh Lad, if he ever shows back up again, I mean, he's dead, he can still come back, that they may also go back and reference this and say, oh, this is how his costume is supposed to be.
Interesting. I mean, that's the, we'll have that's to watch the, for that.
Yeah. I mean, that is something that, I mean, we see happen all the time. Well, you know, they send you a stack of comics. Well, they only have to send you like 3 issues here, and they don't have to send you 40 issues to get your backstory on what's going on. Speaking of costumes, though, go ahead.
No, you.
I was going to say, speaking of costumes, Phantom Girl in this, I still think that this is one of the best costumes of all the Legion members of all time. And the reason why I say that is, number one, it looks modern. You got the cutouts on the arms and down the legs and everything. It still kind of has a little bit of a 70s vibe to it, which is fine. But it's the one that makes her look the most adult and the most normal without trying to push into an area of hypersexuality or creepiness factor or something like that. It feels almost a little bit like when Wonder Woman went mod to an extent. Yes. I mean, it's an all white costume and everything, but I like Phantom Girl's costume and always have of, you know, of this version of the Legion. I've always thought that this styling was the perfect costume. It doesn't rely. I mean, this is something that she could go out into public and people would just be thinking that she's wearing regular clothes. She doesn't have really anything on there that signifies that she's a superhero. There's nothing in here that might cause, you know, parents to cover their eyes, their children's eyes as she walks by. So I think that it is really just a solid freaking costume, even though it is the plainest of all the costumes that we see.
I agree. I feel like there's a simplicity to it. And it's one of those Dave Cockrum designs that Cockrum stuff is A, hard to draw, but B, kind of universal. If you look at costumes like Phoenix, the Jean Grey Phoenix, that's another one where everything about it, you know, just screams out that it's this perfect superhero suit. Or if you look at the redesign that he did for Karate Kid, you can complain all you want about, you know, the big thing blocking your view in each direction, but that's a great suit and it sticks around for decades. And the reason why is it just looks cool. And I feel like you get to a point in, you know, here where his Colossal Boy design has been messed with, his Star Boy design has been messed with, his Wildfire design has been messed with. But that Phantom Girl, everybody knows to leave that alone.
Yeah. Now, the only other costume that I would think that is also a very good costume is Star Boy's costume. Just the black costume with the field of stars. I think that one looks really cool, too.
Right now, they're doing a thing where he has a deep cut V down to his belly button.
Yeah, I'm not
because,
a fan of
you know,
stuff.
It's we're still Naked Legion for about another year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then so something, the sun's going to explode and some of the Legion members have to take off and Marla's all freaked out because he's like, no, you don't understand.
It's just like Brainiac's thing of, could it be murder? It's just cheap drama for, you know, cheap kind of melodrama almost. Oh, no, this star is going to blow up. But it's one of the ones that RJ Brand made. So rather it's like rather than just these selfish legionnaires trying to save one man's life, now they have to keep a sun from going nova and killing, you know, various civilizations.
Yeah. Oh, man. RJ Brand going around shopping around his shoddy products, having suns blow up. I mean, this is like bad. This is bad for the RJ Brand brand.
The RJ brand, if you will.
Yeah. So anyway, turns out that, you know, Marla doubles down on the he's not human. And everyone's like, oh, wait a minute. The only person who's not really human in our group is Prody, but he's dead. That only leaves Chameleon Boy. But Chameleon Boy's off saving the sun. And they're like, but if he doesn't get back here in 10 seconds and do a transfusion, RJ Brand will die. And then Chameleon Boy finds out and he's like, wait a minute. How could RJ Brand be my dad? And then they have to explain. A boy Derlin loves a girl Derlin. They make a little baby Derlin. And that baby Derlin is you, Chameleon Boy. But well, it gets weirder than that, man. But go ahead and let's bring up your important point.
It brings up a very important point in that the science of the 30th century, United Planets, is unable to tell that RJ Brand used to be Derlin.
Right.
So whatever his transformation abilities are, he is indistinguishable from a humanoid. If we presume he's from Earth, from a human from Earth, right?
Yeah, they can't tell that he's not human. And that's because of his disease son. That he had, right?
Right, but he had the Jorgian fever, which, by the way, that's another one of those things where weird, mysterious plagues play very differently in the year 2021.
Dogs. Yeah.
But, I don't like that. Anyway, Chameleon Boy is still Derlin, which means Chameleon Boy is still basically Jell-O in a condom. He's you know, completely malleable. He's amorphous, right? Why, if RJ Brand is genetically and chemically indistinguishable from a human, would his son Reap have any DNA that might help him? I mean, does Reap even have blood?
No, I think wasn't Reap born before they caught the Yorkie fever?
Sure, and but then, if he has, you know, the equivalent of DNA if he has the equivalent of DNA that is still enough like Reap's that you can say this will help him, wouldn't that imply that RJ Brand should not be genetically indistinguishable from a normal human solid?
Yeah. So here's the thing.
Or am I overthinking it?
Right. So what we're doing is people at Earth, they be racists. Right. So RJ Brand gets off the ship and he's in his human form and they go up to him and they're like, OK, you a human or are you one of them shapeshifty guys? And all he has to do is say, well, look at me. I'm a human. And they're like, yeah, you're right. You do look like a human. You don't look like one of those filthy Derlins. And they're like, please welcome to our planet. You're not wearing a purple robe. You don't got tentacles coming out your face. And so they welcome him to the planet. There's
not
never a thing
stick
that
stick him in one of their little beds that go. Dum,
dum, no, they don't ever dum, put him in a thing that says when he first comes to Earth, there's never a thing where he's been, you know, like scanned and said, ah, we detect that you're part Derlin in there. Get off our planet, you filthy alien. So, yeah, what they're doing is just assuming that this guy is human. But then when they're doing the tests on RJ Brand, that's why Marla is trying to find out who is the alien that is the son of RJ Brand. Now, they may not be able to tell that it's Derlin blood, but they know that RJ Brand isn't human. So what he's doing is he's trying to go back and find out, you know, who are all of these, where are all these origin stories come from? Where do they cross paths with RJ Brand? And then Brainiac's like, well, wait, if you just look down the list, you'll see that the only people that have caught the Yorkie fever besides Queen Elizabeth II, are these Derlins. And they're like, wait a minute, that can only mean one thing. RJ Brand is a Derlin, and that means that Chameleon Boy can save him. And then Chameleon Boy's like, I don't understand any of this. Which, again, if you're reading this, you probably don't understand any of this. Let me tell you a story that might explain this. Once upon a time, there was an actor by the name of Jack Nicholson. Okay. Now, Jack Nicholson's real mother was June. His real mother's name was June, right?
Yes.
But June was like 16, 17, 18, something like that, when she got pregnant with the famous actor Jack Nicholson. Ethel May, June's mother, was so upset about this that she threatened Jack's real dad, Don, with the Mann Act, you know, prostitution, taking kids across state line, that kind of stuff, right. Minors especially, and said, "You better get out of here, you." And so Don hightailed it out of there, leaving a pregnant, like, let's say, 17-year-old, maybe 16.
I think she was like 19, if I wasn't mistaken.
Yeah, 18. 18 was how old she was.
Yeah, there you go.
But okay. Probably when she got pregnant, she may not have been. 9 months and all that stuff. But anyway, because Ethel May, again, Jack's grandmother, was all freaked out about what the public would think and the fact that June wanted to go and be an actress, Ethel May pretended that Jack was her son, her natural born baby son. Ethel May's husband had already passed away. And so Jack grew up thinking that June was his older sister, much older sister.
Right.
And Ethel May, for up until Jack was like in his 30s, believed, maybe even close to 40, believed that Ethel May was his mother, even though it was his grandmother, and that June was his sister, even though it was really his mother. It was right after Chinatown became a huge hit, when it was getting ready to win all the awards, that someone started digging into Jack's past to do a piece, I guess it was Time Magazine or something like that. And they found out and they were like, Jack, we hate to tell you this, but June, the one you thought is your sister, is actually your mother. And the one you thought that was your mother is actually your grandmother. And Jack had to go and talk to his aunt, who he probably also thought was his sister, and Lorraine. And she's like, yeah, no, this is the real truth. And it freaked him the F out.
Like, you know,
like it probably would. Right. So if you're confused,
having your whole life basically be something that you misunderstood.
Yeah. If you think Reap is going to be normal after finding out all this, oh, it gets even better, because not only does he find out that RJ Brand, this human, is his father, he also finds out that the person he thought was his mother is actually his aunt, and that his mother is really dead. I have a sinking suspicion, Matthew, that this story came out in 1981. I have a feeling, and I don't remember if this was ever reported in Time Magazine or whatever, because Jack was like, can you guys keep this quiet? I have a feeling it came out shortly after that. I have a feeling that Bridwell and Kupperberg and Jimmy Janes had all heard this Jack Nicholson story, and they wrapped that into our good friend Chameleon Boy's backstory.
I can't say that it didn't happen. I think it would be interesting. And if you look at the way Jimmy Janes draws his eyebrows, there is a slight resemblance between Reeb Daigle and Jack Nicholson in that last panel.
Yes.
I'm proud to, sir, to call you father.
Oh yeah, man. When those two hook up and have their weepy moment, it's pretty sappy. I'm proud to call you son, and I'm proud to call you dad, strange man.
I do like the fact that Reap
but do you trust these Derlins?
That he still thinks of G as his mom.
Yeah. And really,
G
mom
raised him.
Unless he's talking about biological mother, anybody who raises you, I think you can call his mom. It's just like when you have a stepmom, or you have a stepdad, or you have adoptive parents that come in. Oftentimes, kids will just say, "Hey, this is my," you know. People understand that it's a stepdad, but the child still calls it dad or mom or whatever. So I think that that's fine, that if he wants to go that route.
Yeah, but this story also has something not similar, but comparable in Wildfire, who was an orphan who was
what do they call
adopted.
Him?
Huh?
What do they call him?
Wildfire?
Yes. They call him Wildfire.
Do they?
Do
they run call him Wildfire?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I missed my cue there. I'll pick it up out of the cellophane before it scorches. But Wildfire says, oh, I'm an orphan. But then he says, I was adopted by this nice couple. Which, yeah,
I mean,
you
can still be an orphan and still be adopted.
Right. And he worried about his parents in 263, the same story where we saw G for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But last issue or the issue before, he's like, I'm an orphan. I haven't got any family. I'm like, isn't that kind of insulting to the parents that raised you? Even, you know,
I mean, so here's where, and again, I am not, at one time, my wife and I were considering adoption. But we had two wonderful boys instead. And there are a lot of children who get adopted for a number of different reasons, right?
Sure.
It could be bad family situation, could be that the child was given up for adoption, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in this case, Wildfire may consider his adoptive family, his parents, right, that he may have some legitimate concern for because
Seems
they were
to
raising
actually
him.
Consider them not his parents, though.
Well, maybe in this issue, and let me explain it in this way, because, and this also kind of happens, where adoptive families don't tell their kids that they're adopted, and then suddenly somebody needs a blood transfusion, and they're like, no, you're not even the same DNA as your parents, and then the kid finds out that he or she is adopted. The same thing goes true when there's an adopted child that has no idea or no way to track down their natural family, and they do need a transplant, or they do need that kind of thing. So from Wildfire's perspective, I can see that he can say, well, I'm an orphan, which could be true, but he also has parents, which is also true if he's adopted. And so he may not know his biologicals, but he certainly knows the people that raised him. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I
now, let me ask
like
you this.
This story is weird.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's weirdly 70s about matters of adoption. And,
well, and again,
you know, alternative parenthood, which, I mean, granted, it came out in, what, the fall of 1980. But even so, yeah, I feel like, you know, in the future of the Legion, you can have like three dads and four moms. And this is my half cousin, Ford, who shares two of the same mothers as me.
I mean, if it has to be, I mean, family units are very complicated. And certainly one of the things that they're not talking about in any of these books for a long time is people who do not conform to binary sex, right?
Right.
You know, sexual identity. They don't really talk too much about anyone, especially in the 1980s with Reagan in office. You certainly don't mention anything having to do with homosexuality.
Correct.
You know, we don't mention any of those kinds of things here, which still kind of makes everything seem rather normative. And so when you get to something where someone is talking about my parents are not my real parents, I'm adopted, or your aunt is really your mother, is really your father, et cetera. I think a lot of that is still spinning out of Chinatown from, you know, 8-10 years before, 8 years, probably 73, I think. And so I can still see, ooh, that weird thing that she's my mother, she's my sister, she's my sister, she's my daughter kind of stuff, really kind of freaks people out. When really, you know, if you don't know what Chinatown's about, it's about incest, spoiler alert. But you know, it really freaked people
rights.
Out when that
Don't
movie came out. Well, yes, of course. Who could forget the water rights? But so I can see that this being kind of one of those things that are going to be like, oh, wow, this is really going to shake up the status quo and really make people see how complex and how complicated these Legion of Superheroes are. They're far more complex than those X-Men. but so my other question that I've been trying to squeeze in here at this point, do we trust Derlin's? Because
at this point,
we are introduced to, we're introduced to Chameleon Boy, who is this guy with the antenna and the orange and the browns and all this stuff. And he's a very happy, jolly guy, and he can change shape, and he's super friendly. And then we discover, oh, wait a minute, this human has been walking among us all these years, and he's also a Derlin. And then, of course, we find out much later that the form that Chameleon Boy takes to conform and fit in is also not his real shape. I mentioned the purple robes and the tentacles and all that stuff. I mean, that is something where it's like, man, how far can we trust these Derlins if they're always hiding from us? And then of course you have to ask the question, well, why do they feel they have to hide from you?
Right.
Kind of stuff.
What
but
have
point,
you done to frighten them?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this really should bring up a lot of questions, which I don't think it does at this point, but it's certainly gotta be food for fodder it's gotta be food for thought. For all of the future writers of the Legion who then bring all of this stuff to the forefront and say, Why are the Durlans afraid of us? Why are we afraid of the Durlans? And why did they have to go to such extremes and xenophobia and all that? And then, of course, the rise of, what's his name? Earthman. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying.
Well, I call him Absorbency Boy because.
Yes. But that's kind of where a lot of that springs off from, right? I mean, it all ties in later on.
That xenophobia, that can we trust them? Are they among us right now? That actually isn't too far off for both Chameleon Boy and Mr. Brand. But
I mean, it does bring it up, but it also goes into what did we just get done with the remake of Body Snatchers? Invasion of the Body Snatchers was something that had just come out, just a couple of years before, I want to say, like in 78, 79?
77, I want to say.
Oh, was it in 77? Okay, so it's not too far away, and it's certainly probably playing on your local over-the-air radio TV station or on the cable, if you were fortunate enough to have the cable. And then, of course, you got the Cold War, where we're rearing the ugly head of communism again and saying, you know, who are the commies? Are they lurking among us? Is it you? Is it you? Or is it you?
Could it be?
So what'd you think? I've already shared my thoughts on all three of these issues and where I think that they fall in all this. But what's your final thought on this?
My big takeaway from this is that at this point, DC does not exactly know what the limited series format is best used for. And so since they did World of Krypton, which was all a whole bunch of backstory, I feel like they feel that these limited series need to be designed as kind of additional material, like addendums or appendices almost to an ongoing series.
Yeah.
Which does eventually change. And the limited series then becomes a thing in and of itself. But I think that happens honestly, pretty much with Wolverine a couple of years down the line.
Yeah,
but
the bane of everyone's existence is the miniseries right now.
I do feel like it's interesting, and the concept here has legs, but the execution is just so...
I don't know. You've got the MacGuffin that's only there to set up this. Let's give you the hero history rundown of all of these characters, the who's who, and that works, I think, fine. The revealing that RJ Brand is really a Durlan and also Reap's son, that's fine. That's a good third issue reveal and resolution.
Reap's dad,
yes. Or maybe his mother, we don't know.
Time is fleeting.
So yeah, I think for what it is, it's fine. It will be interesting to see how DC then takes this idea of the miniseries and in 5 short years decides, well, if a mini series will work, what happens if we do a series that is limited for the course of 1 year and we get the introduction of not only the maxi series with Crisis on Infinite Earths, but we also, not too long after or right around the same time, we get the Watchmen maxi series as well.
We're the Watchmen.
That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Thank you so much for checking us out. Matthew, what did we learn or what did we glean from the cube this week?
We gleaned from the cube something. I have no idea what any of that means. I think what it means is if you try and kill your cousin, you're going to die in prison of the Yorgian fever.
There you go. I think we also learned that you can't trust those stinking Durlans.
And more importantly, you shouldn't trust the Koluans because they keep changing their name all the time. Who knows who they are?
Thank you so much for joining us. Please check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. We are not able to do this show without your support. Yes, we can't do this show unless we have support from fine listeners like you and you and yes, even you. So head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. And until next time, I'm... Tell me again, lad.
And I'm Brainiac 103.3 KJLS.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, Eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk, too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.